Blog Talk Radio.
I just love the sound of her voice. Good morning, everyone. This is Jeffrey Swartz. I am here with my compatriot. What's your name again? Brendan Berry. And
yeah,
Brendan and I are both. Yeah, last time you checked, but it could have changed. Knowing you, and we are both professors of law at at WMU Cooley Law School. We're at their Tampa Bay campus, and I'm supposed to say that the opinions that Brendan and I espouse on this particular hour are our opinions only. They are not necessarily the opinions of the administration of WMU Cooley Law School or its faculty, either individually or at large. Good morning, Brendan.
Good morning, Jeffrey. How you doing? Is Ohio State
I'm
in Sweet 16? Is Ohio State
Okay, see, now you're starting with me. No, they're not. But they did win the national championship in hockey this past weekend.
Okay.
And their women's basketball team is in the Sweet 16 for the women's tournament. So just because our men didn't come through the way they should have, they weren't supposed to. They were the underdogs. And they remained underdogs, okay?
Uh-huh.
But now that you bring that up, I'm going to hit you with okay. Not this just most immediate past weekend, but the weekend before. Marilyn and I, by the way, I need to tell you this. Remember last week, Hezzy, when you thought you had a caller on the line and you picked up the phone and said, caller, what's your name?
Yeah, you did. It was Marilyn?
Well, you did have someone. It was Marilyn. And she froze.
Okay. I must have scared her to death.
Oh, my God. She said, what am I supposed to do now? And this is a woman who used to be on television. She was a reporter on television. She just, like, froze. Okay.
What did she want to say?
I could not stop looking.
She just wanted to listen.
She was just there to listen to the show.
Okay,
that's all.
Right.
Well, you know, my problem was that I asked for their name. You know, so to be respectful. So I think that's what froze her. You know, like most
people. But the problem would have been if she lied and gave a different name, the minute I heard her voice,
Mary.
I would have known it was her. Okay, it was in Maryland. Hi, good morning. I haven't talked to you yet today. Okay. I just wanted to let you know that happened last week. Hi, Marilyn. Good morning. So Marilyn and I are over in St. Augustine. Now, St. Augustine for me was like my Statue of Liberty for a New Yorker, okay?
Uh-huh.
90% of New Yorkers have never been to the Statue of Liberty, okay? Visitors go to the Statue of Liberty.
Right.
You know,
I'm
tourists go to St. Augustine.
I've been there.
Yeah, what am I – I'm going to go across so I can go look at some old fort, okay? Okay, I mean, you know, seriously, you know, what do I mean? So we had friends that wanted to go. So Marilyn says, we're going. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, it turns out to be the one weekend of the year that you feel like you're in Minnesota. Okay? It got down to, like, 37 degrees. And we knew it was going to get cold there. And it's that wet cold that goes right through to your bones and, you know, you shiver and all that kind of stuff. So I took the heaviest coat that I have, the heaviest jacket I have, which happens to be a leather jacket with lining in it that has Ohio State written all over it. I mean, Buckeyes down the sleeve, Ohio State insignia on the front, on the back. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it's hard to imagine that I went to any other college, okay? So I'm walking around in this thing, and I'm explaining to the guy that we're with a couple, and I explain to the guy, you know, we have the largest fan base in the United States. Okay, that includes Notre Dame and anybody else you can think of. We have the largest fan base in the United States, and we travel well, and you know, I'm a big fan and all. And I go places, and people say OH, and I go IO, or I go OH, and they go IO. That's how we greet each other. And he said, you know, he's like laughing. He thinks this is funny. Okay, I'm making this stuff up. So that night, we decide we're going to go to this restaurant. It's not a restaurant. It's an English pub, and they serve, like, four different things. One of them is a chicken pot pie that everybody raves about. So we decide we're going to go there for dinner. And we walk into this place, not a big place, and it's absolutely crammed. I mean, there's hardly room to walk around in this place. So we get a table, and as we're walking in, On the left, there is this table with like 8 or 9 people. And some girl who's sitting there, woman who's sitting there, says, go Bucks. And I said, go Bucks. Okay. Because I'm wearing the Ohio State jacket, Ohio State Buckeyes. And for whatever the reasons are, I decided at the end of that to go OH to her. The whole room, I literally tell you, the whole room, everybody in there, okay, goes IO, okay? They must have heard it in Miami, okay? Okay? And the guy looks at me, you know, like I hired these people, right? Okay.
Yeah, right.
Okay. And I had to explain to him that on a flight from Tampa to Columbus on a football Friday, there's a nonstop flight at 4:30, and it's known as the Buckeye Express, because these are all people that are going to Ohio State football games. And I explained this to a flight attendant, and she didn't believe me either, okay? So I said, okay, I'll show you. So I yelled out, OH, and the whole plane screams back, IO. And I turn on the music with the Ohio State fight song, and everybody starts singing the fight song, okay? I said, now do you believe, you get it now? She says, I get it now. And I went and I sat down, okay?
Yeah.
So
You're lucky they didn't throw you off the plane for causing all that.
No, they would have to throw us all off. Okay, because we're all singing and we're all doing. Okay, because, you know, we're going up for a football game. So it was kind of a funny little thing that happened. It was a nice little story about what happened over that weekend. So I thought it started out with a little bit of a laugh. The next segment that we do, okay, is what do I really think? And I've been really thinking about what I really think about some things. And although we're going to spend more time talking about the underlying subject I'm going to talk about, I want to talk about why it is that right now the Republican Party is following the guy who has the biggest bomb. Okay? The ones who want to force us into a – like they're going to make Putin back off, okay? Force us into a confrontational, a war, which I predicted a few weeks ago is going to happen anyway. I agree with that. I think eventually we are going to be firing bullets at each other with the Russians. I just can't find any way around it. But they want to push it. They want to make it happen. They want it to make it happen now. And I don't understand why they do this. And then on the opposite end say, Biden's being weak and Biden doesn't know what he's doing. When everyone in the world is saying the guy is leading, the guy is moving incrementally the way that he should be. He has been disciplined in his approach. The only thing they say is, why are we telling him what we won't do? We tell them we will not put boots on the ground for a reason. That is to try to de-escalate what might get escalated into anyway, but why would we want to escalate it into a confrontation where Putin says it's between us and the United States? This is not between the United States and Russia. This is between Russia and Ukraine. And ultimately, maybe NATO if Putin's stupid enough to do something in Latvia. But I just don't understand why they want to follow the guy with the biggest bomb. That's a phrase that was used by John F. Kennedy when he walked out of a meeting during the Cuban Missile Crisis and he announced a blockade and all the Republicans started screaming and yelling, we have to bomb Cuba and invade. And his comment was, why do they follow the guy with the biggest bomb? This is a time when you have a president who's doing everything right and you just can't admit that he's doing everything right. And so therefore, you have to criticize him on both ends of this. You're the guys that were supporting Russia. Remember? You were the guys that were supporting the guy who was working for Russia. Well, there's more than one of them. You didn't want to get rid of the guy who was working for Russia, who said Russia should be our friend. You wouldn't criticize. Now that somebody's doing something about it, you're criticizing he's not doing enough. You know what? There's an old expression that goes, shut your pie hole. Just go along for the ride. You did it before. Do it now. And that's what I really think.
Yeah, yeah. You know, there are two reasons why Biden says we're not going to get into a shooting war with Russia, or at least not on purpose. And one is obviously strategic, right? We don't want to escalate this into a nuclear conflagration any sooner than is necessary. But the other one is pretty simple. It's true. it's a weird thing about Joe Biden. You know, you ask him a question, and you know, if at all possible, he'll tell you the truth. You know, what he's actually thinking. And you know, if people don't like it, that's too bad. The fact is, as long as he's president, we will not intentionally engage in a conflict with Russia. I agree with you; could happen anyway. But a truth teller.
He won't start it.
He's made it pretty clear. I think he's used the term one toe, right? The Russians set one toe on NATO territory. It's on. And so we'll see how insane Putin is. I mean,
and there's a reason for that, because It's because he has a legal obligation.
Right.
To do that.
Yeah.
And NATO has the right to protect its territory. And he knows Article 5 applies. They invoked Article 5 on 9/11.
Right.
And we owe it.
Mm-hmm.
And the Europeans are raising their budgets and they're participating. And so, therefore, all the excuses for dropping them are gone. One toe. One inch. Touch Latvia and you started a war.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, and all those missiles that we're sending to Warsaw, to Poland, is because they're putting missiles in Belarus. They've escalated. And we have to do what we have to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So... Good question, and we wonder every week, you know, what's going on. I'm still trying to figure out. Well, I'm not really. I think it's sort of becoming clear. It's kind of crystallizing a little bit what's going on with the Republican affection for Vladimir Putin. And it's, you know, if you look at the modern Republican Party, the Trump Party. You know, it seems like Putin is pretty much everything they want. He's white. His policies are ethnocentric. He has complete power and does not tolerate any dissent whatsoever. He's rabidly anti-gay, anti-LGBTQ.
He just sentenced Navalny to another 9 years.
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Right.
Yeah, that's it's how he takes care of his political enemies, right? They're all either poisoned, imprisoned, or both. This authoritarian streak is really, really it's a global problem, and we do ourselves a great disservice if we exempt the United States from that statement. I mean, it's obviously a problem here too. So they're all for Putin. They're on the Putin train until we get in this situation where the entire world can see what Putin is doing to innocent people, you know, where it's completely indefensible. And then suddenly Republicans are looking for a way to blame Joe Biden, right, for Putin. It's a disgrace. And so I agree with you. You know, in terms of what I think this morning, I'll kind of talk about one component of a story that we're going to be talking about a lot this morning, which is the confirmation hearing for Ketanji Brown Jackson, President Biden's nominee to be on the Supreme Court. And we'll probably eat up a good chunk of the hour talking about this, but I want to start with the targeting of her by Republicans because of her background as a public defender. Right? She at one time was a federal public defender, which is to say she had the nerve to suggest that indigent defendants in criminal cases are entitled to adequate representation. Right? I would have thought that a remarkably uncontroversial proposition. But apparently it's too much for Mitch McConnell and his ilk, right, who are now questioning whether she's going to be biased in favor of quote-unquote criminals. Right? They can't bring themselves to say defendants in criminal cases because you're not a criminal when you're on trial. You're a criminal when you get convicted. So she's going to be soft on crime because she was a public defender. And it just called to mind, this used to outrage me all the time. And especially when I was up in Michigan, I would pay a little more attention to these, because that's where I'm licensed to practice. I paid a little more attention to, you know, judicial advertising and who was running for what judgeship. And you'd hear these ads all the time in Michigan, and I assume all over the country, where judges or people were running for judge on a platform that they would be tough, quote unquote, tough on crime, right? Nobody's getting out of my courtroom, right? You know, in a criminal case, you know, without me being tough on them, whatever that means. And they'd go after sitting judges, right? If a sitting judge had ruled in favor of a criminal defendant, they'd go after the sitting judge on the basis that this judge is soft on crime. And so I used to listen to these ads and think, how can this person be a judge? By the way, I was on the defense side when I was practicing in Michigan, right? I did some criminal defense work. How do
I'm
you go
surprised.
In front of a judge? Yeah, right. Yeah, well, you shouldn't be. Right. Now I'm in front of somebody who got there by promising to go along with the prosecutor. This happens all over the country, and they're upset because finally we have somebody with a defense perspective. Defendants are entitled to due process. They don't always get it, but they're entitled to it. They're entitled to their day in court. They're entitled to confront the witnesses against them. They're entitled to counsel. When did this become unconservative? I guess they really are on the Putin train, right? You don't need trials.
No,
you don't need an impartial judge. Just throw them in jail.
It used to be that conservatives were, and I remember listening to George Will talk about this, and I want to talk about something that came up in a conversation I saw on TV among some people, and it was worth talking about, and we'll talk about that later. But it used to be that conservatives were, it's all about the Constitution. It's all about the Constitution. It's all about the Constitution. Now that the Constitution doesn't do what they want it to do, mm-hmm. they're ready, willing, and able to dispense with it right. in every way they possibly can. And you don't blame it just on Trump. You have to go back to the Koch brothers when there were two of them. There's only one left.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you have to go back to the Koch brothers and their efforts to undermine democracy from the bottom up by fighting it and destroying it from within. These are people whose father was the founding member of the John Birch Society. And for those of you who don't know, because nobody's really heard of it, John Birch was supposedly the a soldier who was the first victim or the first casualty in World War III. according to the John Birch Society. We've been fighting World War III.
Mm-hmm.
And supposedly are just these patriots. The Koch brothers, and I think Charles is the one that's still alive, okay, are hardly patriots. They didn't like Trump because he was exposing what they really wanted, and they hadn't gotten to that point yet. They did not believe that they had the ability to overthrow the government or to make it an autocracy yet. He was two steps ahead of them, and the country wasn't prepared for it. So I don't understand these people. I don't understand people like Josh Hawley. I am never going to understand how anybody as crazy as Ron Johnson is a senator from the state of Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
He's freaking out of his mind. I know people lie, but he just makes crap up
mm-hmm.
out of whole cloth. I do not understand how people like Marsha Blackburn become United States senators by thumping their Bible. I don't understand it.
Mm-hmm.
McCain called this in the year 2000, in 2008, when he warned we cannot allow the right and the ultra-right religious people to take over the party. It will kill the party. It will kill the country. He called it. Goldwater warned us in 1964 about tying religion to the Republican Party.
Mm-hmm.
The father of modern conservatism. I don't understand. No, I understand. I just don't know what goes through their brains.
Mm-hmm.
Other than white privilege, I am now going to be a minority in my own country. That's what they think. This is my country. You people of color have no business coming here and taking over my country. And if you don't think that's what they really think, that's what they really think.
Mm-hmm.
You're coming here taking my jobs. You're taking over my schools. You're taking over my language. Now my kids got to learn Spanish. What's wrong mm-hmm. with you people? Go back to your own country.
Right, and it's becoming less and less Christian. And to your point about, church and state, I think I've said this on this program before, but my favorite quote on that is from Thomas Paine when he was talking about, there's always been a push. You know, of course, the founders pushed back. But there's always been this this push, right, to call this a quote-unquote Christian country, a Christian nation. And Thomas Paine said, why would you want to mix the two, right, religion and the state? He said the admixture of religion and politics creates a certain, what he called, a mule animal capable only of breeding down. I thought, well, that's a colorful way to put it. But also to your other point, about what's going on here in the Republican mind, I read not that this is a necessarily a profound observation, but once in a while you see something that somebody wrote and you said, that pretty much encapsulates it. But some reporter, I can't remember who now, wrote that, if you talk to, Republican politicians, they know Biden won the election. None of them actually believes Biden didn't win. They know. They know he won.
Of course they do.
Yeah. So their problem is not that an election was stolen. Their problem is that the election results were honored. Their problem is that they think that democracy has betrayed the country. Our democratic system has once and for all betrayed the country because as you
as
say,
opposed to being the country.
Right, exactly. That's not, yeah. that's exactly right. It's our entire system now they consider to be a betrayal. And so they're gonna try to do what they can to undo it. And there's just no question that's what they're trying to do.
It's a betrayal because the country, because they're not a majority.
Mm-hmm.
It's a betrayal because they're not getting their way.
Right. The real Americans, quote unquote.
It's almost like our participation generation wants to take over the country. That if I vote, I automatically get the guy I want.
Mm-hmm.
There's no wieners and there's no losers. We all get a trophy for participating. Okay? If your team doesn't win a game the whole season, you still get a trophy because you participated. Here's an ice cream cone. That's what you get for participating. We take you out for pizza after the game. Okay? You don't diminish somebody else's success by honoring your loss. That's not what we do. It's called what's the word? Competition? Our children have no sense of competition. I want to go back to something you talked about just a few minutes ago. I want to go back to how they're attacking Ketanji Brown Jackson because she was a public defender, right?
Mm-hmm.
A few minutes ago, she was asked questions about her Guantanamo Bay detainee mm-hmm. representation. And I'm going to quote her. And this was a question from Dick Durbin, who is trying to preempt Hawley and the others, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
Federal public defenders don't get to pick their clients. They have to represent whoever comes in, and it is a service. That's what you do as a public defender. You are standing up for the constitutional value of representation. She went on to basically say, that's what makes our system the best in the world. That's what makes us exemplary. She, like other lawyers, who after 9/11 recognized that we couldn't let the terrorists win by changing who we were fundamentally. That's a quote from her.
Mm-hmm.
And that meant that those accused by the U.S. government of having engaged in 9/11 attacks under the Constitution were entitled to representation and fair treatment. And this makes her soft on crime and unpatriotic, according mm-hmm. to Josh Hawley.
Right.
Really? Really, Josh? Let me ask you, have you ever had a relative charged with a crime? Were you glad that that person had a lawyer? Oh, he was an American citizen? Well, I'm sorry. You appear in American courts. You have all the rights of any other defendant. The constitutional rights of this country are not just for citizens.
Yeah, I hear that argument. You know, only citizens have constitutional rights. And when I do, I'll just point to the, let's say, the 14th Amendment.
That one? The 14th
yeah, that
Amendment?
One.
Yeah. That one. Okay, go ahead.
That one. You know, the big one. And
Yeah, the big one.
And okay. let's check our reading comprehension here. Let's see. What does it say there about due process and equal protection? So no state shall deny either one to any what? What's that next word? This is what I ask people when they say that. What's that next word there say?
Person.
Okay. Person. Bingo.
People.
Person.
That's multiple.
Yes.
By the way, that's the plural of people.
Right.
That's the singular of people.
Right.
People's a lot. Yes. Person is a singular.
Yeah. And what I don't see there is the word citizen. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. Any person under the jurisdiction of the United States or of a state is entitled to equal protection and due process. Any person. And as the Supreme Court itself ruled in a series of cases about Guantanamo Bay, there is no question that the United States has custody of the people who are at Guantanamo Bay. And the Supreme Court actually in one case said it might as well be in Florida with the amount of control the United States exercises, civil and military, over Guantanamo, that whole base. That's part of Cuba. And you know, and the problem is that the Constitution says that, okay, so they're under the jurisdiction of the United States, okay, so they're entitled to due process. There are no exceptions in the Constitution. If you're deprived of life, liberty, or property, and there's no question that when you're detained, you are, right, you've been deprived of liberty.
I want people to remember these people have been locked up now.
Yeah.
For almost 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
Some for 30 years without a trial.
And here's the problem, right? Because look, here's another thing I can't stand. When people say, just apply the Constitution as it's written, you never hear a rational person saying that, because the Constitution's written in very broad, vague. Yeah, there are some things that are specific, like you have to be at least 35 to be the president. All right, there's not much, you know, to interpret there. But a word like due process, okay, so you're entitled to due process. These people are under the jurisdiction of the United States. They're entitled to due process because they've been deprived of their liberty. And then the question is, well, what does due process mean? And courts have come up with the same rules. If we were just to sit around any group of people, right, who have, you know, a couple of cells bouncing around in their brain, a couple of neurons, you know, still firing in there, would sit around and come up with the same rules courts did, which is the due process means procedures, due means fair. And so at a minimum, to your point, Jeff, at a minimum, what due process means is three things. Number one, you get notice, right? You have to be on notice that what you were doing was wrong, even if it's constructive notice, you know, in a statute or something. And you have to be on notice that you're accused of wrongdoing, what you're accused of doing. So you have to have notice. This is common sense. Next, you're entitled to a hearing. Now, that doesn't mean a formal hearing necessarily where there's a judge, you know, sitting behind a bench and everything, but you're entitled in some form to tell your side of the story. Okay, so that's the second
thing.
Yeah,
I like to say that due process is, well, however it is described, wherever you are at any one time.
Mm-hmm.
So that if you are in North Korea and you try to steal a poster, you get due process as the North Koreans describe it to be. If you are in Italy and you are accused of murdering your roommate, you get due process as the Italians define due process.
Mm-hmm.
Due process is not just the way you think it is. It's however it's described wherever you are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I guess the question is, do we want to be North Korea, right? That's why American courts say no, right? No.
No.
You're entitled to
notice. No, I promise
you
don't want to be
in
North Korea. Yeah.
No.
I don't
want
Rocket Man. I don't want Rocket Man to be my boss.
Yeah, no thanks. Yeah, and speaking of Rocket Man, the third component of due process is an impartial decision maker, right? Somebody who's going to be fair.
Right.
And to your point, in the United States, that's the way it's supposed to be.
Not, in France, a country that we supposedly have affinity to, the prosecutor and the judge are the same person.
Mm-hmm.
And the burden of proof is on the defendant to prove themselves innocent.
Mm-hmm.
That's their due process. It's not our due process. We don't believe that. It's the other way around. So how do you define due process? Due process is as however it's described by the laws of wherever you are.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way I define it.
Yeah. And many countries don't have a promise of due process, right, or equal protection. you know, those are contained in the U.S. Constitution. But, yeah, the people at Guantanamo Bay, you know, the problem, and it's a real problem, is that, as you said, they were held for lengthy periods of time without, remember what I said about notice, right? You're supposed to know what you're accused of. They weren't even told what they were accused of.
Yeah.
Never mind provided a hearing. And the Supreme Court said you can't do that. I guess they've got a problem with the, at the time, you know, a conservative Supreme Court said you can't do that. I guess Josh Hawley has a problem with them too, right? How dare a court intervene, right? In interpreting the Constitution and insisting that it be applied properly. So,
he's getting roasted by her even as we're sitting here because they haven't gotten his questions, but Democrats are covering his questions so that they're already answered.
Right.
For example, and this is important, He has accused her of being soft on crime because of her lenient sentences for people who were accused of child pornography.
Right.
And her response, and she was asked by Dick Durbin, what was going through your mind when you sentenced these people? And she took that opportunity to look at Josh Hawley and say, in her response, as a mother and a judge who had to deal with these cases, I was thinking that nothing could be further from the truth in regards to Hawley's accusations.
Mm-hmm.
She went on to say, these are some of the most difficult cases that a judge has to deal with because we're talking about pictures of sex abuse of children. We're talking about graphic descriptions that judges have to read and consider when they can decide how to sentence in these cases. And there is a statute that tells judges what they're supposed to do. And that statute doesn't say look at only at the guidelines and stop. The statute doesn't say impose the highest possible penalty for this sickening and egregious crime. The statute says calculate the guidelines, but also look at various aspects of this offense and impose a sentence that is, doesn't say impose the highest possible penalty for this sickening and egregious crime. They're going after her on that, which, by the way, she deviated upwards on four of those six cases.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? In one case, imposed a sentence of 29 and a half years on that defendant. That's a long time in a federal prison, people. Calling her soft on crime because she said, and we were going to talk about this, so let's bring it up. She was the vice chair. Before she was a judge, she was the vice chair of the Supreme Court sentencing, or the Federal Sentencing Guidelines Commission. Not the chair, the vice chair. And everything that she proposed that passed unanimously. So if she's soft on crime, so is the whole sentencing commission. She made a statement today that I thought was really interesting. Her attitude is that someone should not be sentenced to more time than is necessary to fulfill the purpose of punishment, which brings up a kind of debate, okay? A real debate over what is punishment for.
Right.
And I teach this. You taught it too.
Mm-hmm.
That there are two theories of punishment that this country was founded upon, and we've gone back and forth between them our whole history. Goes back to Old England. There is a retributive method, and an eye for an eye is not what I'm talking about here. Excuse me. I apologize for that. The retributive method talks about punishment for punishment's sake. It is not about rehabilitation, and it is supposed to deter that specific person from committing that crime again. That's the retributive method. There is the utilitarian thought process, where punishment being certain, that is the certain amount of punishment for what you do, is a deterrent to the general public, not a specific deterrent towards somebody, but a general deterrent towards the public not to commit that crime. But that punishment does lend itself and goes through the process of rehabilitation. That's what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the two theories of punishment we operate from. The sentencing guidelines have been, since their inception, a retributive thought process.
Mm-hmm.
We don't believe in rehabilitation anymore. We'll offer it to people if they want it, but it's not the purpose of your going to jail. States have done away with the rehabilitative process. They'll offer them things that can rehabilitate people, but that's not why you're there. If you want to take advantage of it, great. You're there to get locked up every day and to know that you are locked up every day in a cage. And then you get your time to get out in the yard and stretch your legs. And you work a little bit. But every night you go back to your cage. That is that's the retributive thought process. And that's what the sentencing guidelines have been. But it has been a disaster in the context of the number of years people get for the kind of crimes that they commit. There is no thought process, at least it was supposed to be there, but it isn't, of punishing people for two things, what they did and then adding years for what they've done in the past. That's how the sentencing guidelines work. I've had to work with them. I've defended people in federal court. I've had to defend people and try to get them the best sentence I can get them. And at first, if a judge deviated downwards, they had to write an order that could be appealed by the government. Not so much when they deviated upwards, but downwards. And the government was appealing anybody who went downwards. Now the guidelines are what they were supposed to be, guidelines. They're just guidelines, don't you know? And yes, you have to say why you're doing what you're doing, and there are specific words you have to say, but the government doesn't appeal these sentences anymore because there is discretion. I had a judge who had to give my client a 15-year minimum mandatory for saying these words, "Here come the cops," as he watched his cousin do a drug deal. And for that, he was charged with conspiracy and obstruction of justice, and he got a 15-year minimum mandatory. And a judge looked down at me, okay? Judge King, James Lawrence King, can't forget him. And he looked down and he said, "I've been doing this for 25 years. And when Congress tells me I can't exercise my discretion because I don't know what I'm doing, it's time for me to quit." And 2 weeks later, he took senior status. He let me go on for 45 minutes railing against the guidelines. He'd heard it all. He just let me vent, okay? She was on the commission that made these guidelines possible to be related to the person, and calculating the guidelines is just it's just not enough. It's not enough. And I commend her for what she did. Don't sit there and say she's soft on crime. There were, I think, 7 members of the commission, or was it 9? I can't remember. She wasn't alone. Don't blame her. And it just means that she's capable of thinking through something and reaching a conclusion based upon the facts that are in front of her. You should be applauding her.
Well, before you continue, there's a caller on the line, so let's see if we can bring them in, and they'll have a question for us. Hold on a moment. Okay, there we are. Hello, caller. Good morning. Would you be kind to give
us
your first name?
I'm Joshua from Chicago. How are you guys doing?
Hey, Josh, how's it going?
Do
you have a question?
Yes, sir. I have a little issue with this because I'm from one of the most corrupt states in the country. So when politicians and these DAs and these state's attorneys come out and they seem very virtuous and everybody's all backing them, and then they steal a bunch of money and run away, and you're left holding, you know, the tag as a taxpayer, you know, we're still doing that today. I just want to know what's the actual ramifications. Like, is there actually a punishment for these people, or what do we do?
Well, I think you have a former governor who, but for the actions of our most recent past president, would still be doing time. He got caught, and he'd still be doing time. There were a number of people, and you sound fairly young, so you may not remember the administration of Mayor Washington like I do, and the people that worked in his administration who got caught and went to jail.
I'm sorry, sir. I just got to say this. Four out of our last six governors in Illinois went to prison on corruption charges.
And that's good. That means the system caught them and punished them. And so that's a good thing.
I know, but I'm talking about the nature of our state, the way that we operate. We allow these people to get into positions of power, and it's completely unnecessary. We keep doing this over and over again. We keep
How are you
failing.
But it's the people's choice, isn't it? Didn't the people vote these people in?
Yeah, you can say that, but no, the entire state of Illinois is completely bound to whatever Chicago chooses. Now, I'd be happy to split the state, 10 miles south of Kankakee. That would be a conversation. But Chicago completely influences our state capital down in Springfield, and we have no say. If you're out here farming, you're working your butt off, making money with your hands, it means nothing in the state of Illinois. We get taxed the highest.
What's the actual ramifications of this? Well, you're feeling the ramifications of it, and I sympathize with your plight. Okay, I really do. It's not that I'm against what you're saying. I'm not disagreeing with you. That it's unfortunate. Yes, the voters in Chicago pretty much control what happens in the state of Illinois. We know that. Okay, it's been that way. It's the same thing in New York. The city of New York controls much of what happens in New York. Los Angeles and San Francisco control California. The people of Miami and Dade County and Fort Lauderdale and Palm Beach control pretty much what happens south of the Okeechobee. But then take a look at the example. The state of Florida is solidly red Republican. Democrats haven't had a majority in either house for at least 20 years, haven't had a Democratic governor since Lawton Chiles, okay? So they control the state, the places which are more rural, once you get out of South Florida, control the state.
Governor DeSantis barely won, though, right? So that's not actually like a red state. That's a very purple state.
In the end, DeSantis won they're kind of purple. But, again, with the districting in this state, since I live down here, I can tell you, okay, in this state, because of the districting, Republicans have 70 votes in the House. They control two-thirds of the votes in the Senate. And if there's a Republican governor, being a Democrat in the state of Florida means nothing as far as state government is concerned. Zero. Nada.
Yes, sir.
Okay. So that happens down here. DeSantis won by about 5 or 6 points in the end. He is in a real race against Charlie Crist, who is a former Republican, now a Democratic congressman, who apparently, according to USA Today, actually has the lead over DeSantis if people come out and vote. It will be an interesting race. My prediction is DeSantis will get reelected by a pretty good margin when it's over. I understand.
I was going to ask you.
Okay.
I'm sorry, sir. I wasn't trying to interrupt you. I was going to ask you.
No. What's your question?
DeSantis ran Florida pretty well when it came to all that nonsense that we had to deal with over the past, like, 2 or 3 years. Would you vote to – like, I live down there. I lived in Gainesville and Jacksonville. And
okay.
We never had that kind of stuff back when I was living down there, and I had to move up to Maine. But would you say that DeSantis actually did a decent job as a governor?
No, I would not. And I think I've made that abundantly clear, if you've ever listened to us before. I believe that Ron DeSantis is practicing to become an autocrat. He has told the state legislature, I don't like your districting plan, so I'm not going to sign it. And if you pass it over my veto, I will go to court to get it thrown out because there aren't enough Republicans. We should have more Republicans. You're giving away seats to Democrats. That's exactly what he said. You should be gerrymandering more seats for Republicans. He's practicing to become an autocrat by forming his own army down here. He's going to have an army of people monitoring elections, intimidating voters. We passed a constitutional amendment that allowed people who had done their time and completed their sentences to vote. He passed laws to try to prevent it from happening. He is not,
yes,
under any circumstances, a good governor. He does not care about the people of the state of Florida. He only cares about his ambitions to run for president of the United States and to hold on to Donald Trump's base. That's all he cares about. So, no, he doesn't care about the people of the state of Florida. He doesn't care about education down here. All he cares about is cutting taxes and giving money away from the education budget to people by way of vouchers. That's all he cares about.
Okay. No, I'm not disputing that at all.
Okay. So, no, he is not a good governor.
Okay.
And if you've listened to us before, you would know that I refer to him as Moron DeSantis. Okay? He's not a bright man. Okay?
Well, let me ask you both to hold on and listen in because we have another caller and we've only got about 8 minutes left. So, Josh, I hope you don't mind.
Thanks for calling, Josh.
Should we keep you on? Thank you. And we won't disconnect you.
Thank you for calling, Josh. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, let's bring in the next caller. And, okay, good morning, caller.
My name is Joe. My name is Joe.
Hi,
Joe. Got 8 minutes left. I want to make this.
Our friend Joe is back. Okay.
No, I've never called before. But okay. here's what I want to ask you. I got in at the time when you were talking about how you were defending the client, and the only thing he did was to say, "Here come the cops." Now, where in the rational universe does it become not a crime for a lookout to say to people who are in doing a drug deal, "Here come the cops"?
I would agree with you, but the jury didn't agree with me.
I thought, I thought you were not defending that.
I'll tell you the story. I was a defense attorney. This kid was home on leave from the Army. He went to his cousin's house. They said, "Let's go over to Miami Beach and party." He got in the car with three other guys. On the way there, they stopped at the International Mall in Miami. Okay? It was closed. It was like 11 o'clock at night. They pulled off into a semi-dark area, and his cousin said, "I got to meet some people, and then we'll go over to the beach." My client got out of the car, walked four or five parking spaces away, and sat down on a parking curb. Another car came up. He realized what was going on. He just sat there. And then all of a sudden, red and blue lights were coming at him, and he yelled, "Here come the cops." That's all that happened. His own cousin said he wasn't involved. The jury didn't believe that. They convicted him, and he got a 15-year minimum mandatory for it.
Right. So he did not know it was going down, but he...
Until it was happening.
Until it was happening. For how long was the drug deal occurring before the cops came?
Well, the people that they were dealing with were cops, and once the money's exchanged, I would say probably less than 5 minutes.
He just
sat there and watched. And he said, "The cops are coming." That's all he said. And that's all
he
did.
Was it your defense that he just blurted it out as a sort of a major reaction?
He just blurted it out, and it certainly did not show that he had agreed to a conspiracy for the purposes of that drug deal.
No, right. Well, right
but
now,
the jury
from what
didn't
I understand,
believe it.
I hear you. from what I understand from a former prosecuting attorney, they love conspiracies because, example, now, correct me if I'm wrong.
Right.
If I'm a member of the lodge, any old lodge, and there's about 10 members in the lodge, 9 of them go out to commit a crime. I don't even know who they are. Now, these 9 are picked up by the cops for the crime. Is it possible that I can be charged with a conspiracy for simply knowing these people?
No. I think. Well, can you want to take that one, Brendan?
No, go ahead. You're the criminal guy.
Yeah, I'm the criminal, yeah. okay. No. Here are the elements of conspiracy. An agreement by 2 or more people to commit an underlying offense. If you are not part of the conversation, if you did not take any action to aid and assist the conspiracy, which would evidence your agreement to enter into the conspiracy, then you can't be convicted of anything. Mere association is not enough to convict you of a crime. There would have to be something more than you just happen to be in the room.
Okay. Now, that makes sense to me. Now, the reason why I ask is because, I mean, the prosecuting attorney used to be a talk show host, and I forget her last name is Wheel. I forget her first name. And I may have misunderstood what she was talking about, but the way that she was talking about conspiracy, she certainly made it seem like it was a friend of the DA's. And that
was this on the radio or on television that you heard that?
Radio.
It was a radio. Okay, so it wasn't Katie Fang, because I think Katie Fang's too smart to say something like that. But go ahead.
No, her last name is Wheel. I don't forget her first name. The last name is Wheel. W-I-A-T-H-L, I believe. And I think she was an ADA in Los Angeles, but I may be wrong about that, too. But the way she made it sound was that all you had to do is just be of the same particular association that these people were in.
No.
Bang. Okay, good.
That would be a miscarriage of justice. That would be a miscarriage of justice. Okay.
Okay, good.
That would be an absolute miscarriage.
All right. Those are my questions. That's it. You got, what?
Thanks for calling, Joe. Thanks for the questions. Thank you, Joe.
Okay. All right.
Very
good.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, we'll keep these people on so they could listen to the rest of the broadcast. Not a problem.
Okay.
And any last words from you as we come to the close?
I think there's something that probably Brendan wants to talk about. I'll let him do that.
Well,
okay.
How much time we got here? What kind of can of worms can I open up?
We can easily go over. We can easily go over an extra 5 minutes, so it's not the end of the world.
Do you want to raise that thing that we've been talking about, but we weren't sure we wanted to raise just to dip our toe in it, or would you rather wait until you're a little bit more prepared?
Yeah, let's wait. Let's wait on that topic.
Okay. See, we're going to leave you hanging, public. You don't know what's coming your way. Okay.
Yeah.
I like doing that. Okay.
Yeah. Jeff and I have been talking about a controversial issue that we need to do a little more research and formulate.
With bated breath.
Kind of,
we'll have to wait till next week. Is
It might. Yeah. We're going to talk some more during the next week or so about this. It is a very very prominent issue in some places. It is controversial, and I think that we both agree there is no right answer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be the problem. That there is not a right answer. But the reason why, and I won't tell you what it is, but I will tell you why I want to talk about it, and that is that there has been a great deal of criticism in editorials lately about the idea that we are incapable of talking to each other about controversial issues without placing everybody in a box, that there is no middle ground that leaves you, it's like a no man's land, for lack of a better way to put it, or no woman's land, so that I'm not considered to be a sexist. The idea that we can't talk about these things, that I think it was the Wall Street Journal that said America has a free speech problem.
Mm-hmm.
America has a free speech problem because we don't listen, we don't talk about things that need to be talked about Because we are afraid.
Of what?
That somebody will label us some way, in some derogatory way, if we say something that doesn't fit somebody else's thought process.
Mm-hmm.
Some people call it cancel culture. I wouldn't go that far. But it was an interesting editorial in the Wall Street Journal in the past week or so. And there was another interesting editorial in the Wall Street Journal by a very conservative person who basically said that Republicans should vote against Ketanji Brown Jackson or Jackson Brown simply because – Brown Jackson, okay – because Democrats started it years ago with Bork. And what they did to Coney Barrett and what they did to Kavanaugh, they deserve. They don't deserve to have bipartisanship. Oh, yeah? Did Garland get bipartisanship? I can sit and go back and forth and say, oh, yeah, what about, all damn day. But if you're going to write for the New York Times and you're going to write an editorial, who is supposed to go first, pal? You're telling Republicans you shouldn't go first with bipartisanship. But we need bipartisanship. You must look like Bozo the Clown. Your mouth is so contorted, going talking out of both sides of your mouth. I mean, that's crazy. If you believe in bipartisanship, then you look at your party and you say, it's time somebody changed this, and you have a chance to change it, so change it. He's not saying that. Payback is what you get, and make them bend a knee to you. That's crap. So this is why the subject matter that we will get to, whether it's next week or the week after, or something like that, you will understand that there is no right answer. But it's a subject that needs to be talked about. And people should feel free to talk about it. And not be talked about derogatorily because whatever they say doesn't fit one side or the other.
Mm-hmm.
So they get hit from both sides. There's something wrong with you because you're talking logic. Okay, Spock was a what was the planet he was from again?
Vulcan.
Yeah,
Vulcan. That's right.
I hate Vulcans because they think of logic. I'm sorry, there's something wrong with logic. Okay. I hate Vulcans. Okay. Well, no, I don't hate Vulcans. They're a little cold. There's no emotion, but their logic is good. So I mean. That's what that Brendan and I were considering today. We talked, for about 15 minutes this morning?
Yeah.
Just about
that
subject? Yeah. And there's going to be a lot more conversations between us before we air what we want to say. And we may end up not agreeing, and that'll be unique. Okay? We may end up not agreeing, but at least we will say what we think without calling each other names. Okay.
Yeah.
Everybody knows Brendan's a jerk. I mean, I just...
I know. Yeah, I wear that badge with honor. That's
I got to tell you, I had to end it with a laugh. I'm sorry. I just had to.
Yeah.
I mean, the silence was deafening when I said that. I mean, you guys didn't know what to do. It was great. Brendan is one of my favorite people. I would never say anything derogatory about him, ever. Okay, I just wouldn't. There's nothing derogatory to say. There really
exactly.
isn't.
That depends who
okay.
you ask.
Now, I don't know anybody that has anything derogatory to say about Brendan. If they did, I'd say they're a jerk. How do you like that?
Good.
So be that as it may. You got any last words you want to chime in here, Brendan?
No, I think we covered enough bases for one day. So let's give Hezzy his air back.
Be well, guys, and thanks everybody.
Be well.
Joe Brendan. And Josh.
All right.
Okay. I'll be talking to you very shortly, Brendan.
Yeah.
Have a great day, Hezzy. And we'll see you next week.
You do the same.
Okay.
Be well, guys.
Yep. All right.
Thank you so
All
much.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, let's move on to our next guest who's been patiently waiting to get online, and that's Bob Marone. We're going to pick him up in a moment. Bear with me a second. Okay. Yeah, let me just think if I got this right. Yeah, I think this is, nothing is labeled here on the phone, but I think this is Bob Marone. We're going to find out in a moment. Good morning. Is this Bob?
Yes, it is. Can you hear me, Hezzy?
Oh, yes, I can. Well, thanks for your patience.
Well,
I wouldn't have thought that we would go on and on like this, but we've had some great callers, which are always very good. How are you feeling today?
Very well, all things considered, very well. In fact, I hope those gentlemen are still listening. Those communist reactionary idiots, they're terrific. I love those guys. I like when I call them, I get to listen to them. And if I may, I had to comment on that. And I know they listen for a few minutes before they go on their way. But he's so absolutely on the money. But I think one thing I'd just like to throw into the little fire that they're building is we can't agree on the facts. Things have become so muddled with social media and fake news and Trumpism, et cetera, that no one can agree on what the facts are. So it's impossible to have a conversation. You know, one of the last calls that I took on my station that's in hiatus, Hezzy, was a guy that was spouting falsehoods, and the problem wasn't even aware of it. And I finally asked him, I said, what do you do for a living? And he said, oh, I'm an auto mechanic. I said, well, good. I said, what would you do if every day people called you and said there was no such thing as internal combustion? You would lose your mind. And that's what it's like to work in the political world right now in terms of political talk radio and journalism, which is what you do. To wit, I may get back to that, but I mentioned to you yesterday that I wanted to talk a little bit about I've been covering news in New Rochelle now almost 20 years. You've, of course, covered news in that and many other cities here in Westchester. But one of the things that's troubled me is there's this sensibility and I understand where it comes from, which is troubling, and it just goes to show you that manipulating the truth is not the sole purview of the right or the far right. I have watched over the last 3 or 4 years the New Rochelle school system hire and fire people who the superintendents. Rowdy and crazy board meetings, school board meetings, changing the board president and so forth, all having to do with some fundamental things, which is school safety. Where New Rochelle paints one picture, it needs to paint more of a mosaic. Here's my point. Just recently, there was a video that circulated, and now they're investigating it, one New Rochelle student stomping another New Rochelle student again and again with his foot. About three and a half weeks ago, I'm sure you're familiar with it, Hezzy. In fact, 4 blocks from where I hang my hat in the west end of the city, a kid gets out of school, 3 o'clock, and they think he had to have his gun in school, but he had one of those new fabricated ghost guns that are hard to tell. But New Rochelle won't have any metal detectors because it would make it look like we have a rough city, which we do. Half of it anyway. And he just walks along Washington Avenue until he comes upon the kid he didn't like, and he shoots him to death.
Mm.
3 years ago, we had a very famous killing. And look, I realize it's not quite like the South Bronx yet. And if you're from the South Bronx, my apologies to you. No, get over it, I should say. They've got a lot of work to do in the Bronx. But there's this effort to make it something that it's not. Now, it's still a very good school. It's a huge high school. It has a beautiful campus. It has a lot of people that care. But in this wave of whether it's bail reform that's gone too far, whether it's racially based, it's racist because more people are arrested who are of color or Latinos than not. We're unable to deal with a real problem because of the fake premise.
Which is?
And I've watched.
Do we know what the problem is?
Talk to me.
Well, no, I mean,
what is
do we know what the problem is?
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. I thought you were raising that as a question, a wise one.
No.
Yeah, we do. We're not confronting the real issue, which is a certain amount of violence, a certain amount of bad behavior in our schools for fear that we'll hurt real estate prices, for fear that people will realize that the school maybe isn't as safe as we say that it is, a failure to want more security in the school because it will look too much like a lockdown school in the Bronx. And, you know, I'm a guy
why do we care? Is the conduct in the Bronx any different than it is in New Rochelle or in Yonkers or in Mount Vernon or Scarsdale?
Fair enough. It's a continuum. The Bronx is worse, but at least in the Bronx and in the tough neighborhoods in the city, they face up a little bit more to the fact that they have behavioral problems. They face up to the fact that they may have to have a metal detector in the school.
But are the metal detectors diminishing the negativity that is being perceived, or the negativity that becomes a reality? Are we concerned that we may look like the Bronx?
Good question.
If we are, we are.
Not a bad.
And if we're
yes,
not,
yes.
Then we're not,
not a bad question. But yes, of course we're not the Bronx, and that is an extreme example to make a subtle point. But we do have issues and you articulated it very well. We don't want to appear as if we're the Bronx. We don't want to appear as if we have problems. We don't want to appear as if
we're
the
Bronx. I don't understand what the real difference is between New Rochelle, the Bronx, Mount Vernon, Yonkers, Scarsdale. What is the difference that we're so concerned that we might be labeled one thing or the other?
Well, it's not even so much as a specific label. No, it's not so much as a specific label, but it's a concern that the city will lose its reputation for being a Tony sleepy suburb. And I think that there's a larger issue here. One of the things that's been good about coming from, not from Westchester, is that the southern cities in Westchester being thought of as sleepy suburbs, I find laughable. Now, yes, you go to the north end of New Rochelle on the border of Scarsdale, and it has some wonderful neighborhoods that are diverse. It has a lot. But whether it's New Rochelle, whether it's Mount Vernon, whether it's Yonkers, and a number of other towns and cities I could name, they are urban centers in the midst of an emerging sleepy suburb. There was a piece the other day, and I forget which paper that it was in, but it was a piece about the Veritas Project. I did not know, and this is the right-wing Dirty Tricks group, and it was described in one newspaper as sleepy Mamaroneck. Now, Mamaroneck has some beautiful areas, and as you go into Larchmont, I get it. But sleepy, I think the biggest false premise about Westchester is that it's, at least in its southern tier, is that it's a sleepy suburb. It is. They are urban centers with all the problems that urban centers have. Now, New Rochelle is still right. Is still like has two sides battling. No, it's nothing new for you, has it? You've covered this for decades. I get it. It is a bit, but it's a miss.
But, well, like New Rochelle is divided in half, but it's all based on socioeconomic prospect, isn't it?
Yes, 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 very much
and
so.
So, but so there's no resolution unless there's a way of, well, it's certainly not going to be a resolution by for this community of people unless they get a better education and have a prospect of employment that will upgrade them. And or maybe it's just, you know, it might be too expensive to live in Westchester.
No, well, you know what? Well, it is. Well, you know what? My point is more about spin. And about, it's part and parcel to what the gentlemen who come on before me were talking about.
Uh-huh.
It's not that New Rochelle is like the worst parts of the Yonkers or Mount Vernon. It's that New Rochelle does have issues that it often, as a community, tries to repress. For example, what you're saying, in the West End, where I am,
mm-hmm.
it is a Latin community of actually great vigor. It's exactly the way when I was growing up, the Italian neighborhoods were. Lots of people
mm-hmm.
want to work, lots of families, lots of children. It's coming along so much better than people could have hoped. That's the real good news for a community that is essentially an immigrant community. The work culture is strong, but also just like the Italians and the Irish and the streets I forget the name of the movie that Martin Scorsese did. You've got young people. You've got people that haven't gotten a good education yet because of when they came here. You've got crime.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the police do a pretty good job of dealing with it. At least I think that they do. And the street corners are, you know, usually you get a lot of young males hanging out. There are strange transactions taking place on the street corners. No worse than in other immigrant neighborhoods in the past. So you've got that issue, and you've got the whole Lincoln Avenue corridor where there's a certain amount of crime. But already I'm probably guilty of being politically incorrect because I mentioned ethnicity in a neighborhood. But we
really ethnicity. You know, you could break everything down to 20 different concepts. But at the end of the day, New Rochelle is somewhere between the better part of Westchester from a financial perspective and from an educational perspective than another part of New Rochelle. And you've got that in different communities as well. There are some unbelievably wealthy places in Yonkers that are doing very well. They're practically
mm-hmm.
ostracized from the rest of the city. You've got the same
mm-hmm.
issues in Mount Vernon. You got the same issues in the Bronx. There are sections in the Bronx that will blow your mind.
Oh, yes, I'm aware of that.
We've got very wealthy people, a great educational system, because the schools are basically in neighborhoods. And people who live in a particular neighborhood may excel because they have the educational background, and their parents have the background, and so on and so forth. But isn't that the American dream? Because people come here, and they come to New Rochelle, they come to Yonkers, they come to other places in order to advance.
That is a part of the overall dynamic that I love. It is the part of the diversity of New Rochelle that I absolutely love and that drew me to the city. But I don't think we're going to do. I think we're doing our children a disservice when we paint a picture of Pollyanna rather than a reality. And again, it's when you live with it and you see it every day.
Kids are living the reality.
No, it is not.
They know what's going on.
No, yes, yes.
The kids know what's going on. The parents probably don't.
That dead kid.
Well, the parents are more in denial than the kids are.
Absolutely. And the kid that lie dead three blocks right across the street from where I drop off my laundry. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he's still alive if we check backpacks. Maybe he's still alive if we have a metal detector. And my point, and I remember the huge debate over, huge debate, Hezzy, over whether or not we should have armed guards in the school. And I understand that could be very oppressive. Our children would be offended, which I don't believe, but armed guards in the school. We don't have a problem here. We don't have a problem here. We don't need this. Now, I understand for the vast majority of kids, we don't. But all law enforcement's based on exceptions to the rule, not the general rule. I mean, there are two management theories that have existed forever. One is management by objective. The other is management by exception. And so
Bob, at the end of the day, is the discussion that we're having, what's the end game to it? Can it be changed, or is the reality that needs to evolve on its own? There's no way to push it or prod it or to do anything about it.
No,
because everything is financial.
True enough, but this goes beyond financial. This goes, well, it is, I'm sorry, I now defer to the Senator from Yonkers. It is financial, and it's financial because our schools, to a great extent, dictate whether or not people with children want to move here. And it affects the price of homes. It affects the tax base. I get it, but therein lies the rub. That's the little piece of onion that I'm trying to peel back. See, I think you can do both without hurting the economics of your community by simply dealing with school safety more directly and more honestly. And I'm a guy that changed.
Yeah,
I was on sort of the other side.
But again, there's a little fiefdom. If you look at all the different school districts in Westchester County, and they're all different, you know, it's different in Rye than it is in Mamaroneck, than it is in wherever you go, Yorktown and so on and so forth, or Bronxville. You know, look, the bottom line is it's like a very insular place. Bronxville is different than Mount Vernon, which is right across the street.
Yes. Yep.
And how is it that one area can do so well and another area is faltering? And you look at Mount Vernon. Yeah, well,
It is a demographics and culture. But you walk a tightrope when you go there because – as you know, that square mile over in Bronxville is has very economically well-off people. And now once you start going backwards, once you start going backward deterministically, you realize that it's a well-educated area. People have gone to great schools. They've had better opportunities. I get all that, and that's why it works.
They're first generation. They're not there for six generations back. Some of them have been there that long. But you've got people who live in Bronxville, for example, who have $5 million homes across the street, literally in Mount Vernon. You've got other very successful people, but their real estate costs are not even half. They're maybe a quarter or an eighth of the value of property in Bronxville. And it's just across the street. You could barely know what the difference is unless you're aware of it.
I thoroughly understand that. You know, that's like there's that
Greenwich. And also a lot of people who live in Bronxville, for example, and other communities that are very successful are first-generation success stories. Their parents were not. Joes and whatever.
And that's what we can look forward to in all of these other communities. But in the interim,
can we do about the school?
Okay.
I don't know what
can
be
done. We can do is well, there are steps that can be taken, but they have to be honest steps to deal with school safety more directly and to not mince words.
Do we know, or do we pontificate, you know, with words, but we don't have any solutions? Because I know, for example, as far as I'm concerned, the superintendent of schools in the city of Yonkers, Dr. Kazada, is a waste of time, an absolute waste of time. He's done absolutely nothing. Well, yeah, but that's crap. That's not good enough.
It's good enough for him.
He's making a fortune of money.
You know,
but the kids
are
not.
What it's like to be. And this is not to defend superintendents or to indict them. It's just a story to add some granularity to this. A superintendent in one of the rougher neighborhoods in Westchester. Now, this was off the record, so I won't even try and suggest who it was.
You don't have to mention it. Doesn't matter.
He would talk to me only off the record. So I can tell this off the record story, and it's old enough now. A kid's on his way home, from school. Nerdy little kid, but nice kid. Another kid comes upon him, beats the kid up mercilessly. Then he urinates on him. And because of the political zeitgeist, he was forced to put this kid back in school, the perpetrator, 2 weeks later. And
what was the rationale for bringing it? What's the rationale for doing that?
The rationale for doing that was...
Did God come down and smack him around and say, I want you to get this kid back?
Good point. But the powers that be in his city, the rules that govern what he could and could not do required that he do that. And
They required what?
That the rules allowed this kid to go back to school.
On what basis? For beating somebody up and then urinating on him? This is unheard of in America.
It's not American. Which is my...
I've been around the world. I know it's bullshit. This is insanity.
This is a true
story. So you mean to tell me in New Rochelle or wherever the hell this place happened that this
wasn't
was
New
permitted?
Rochelle.
I would go to sue.
Yes.
I would sue them to kingdom come.
Well,
they
now
have no
here's
right
where
to do
we're
that.
Not doing. Well, here's where we're not. We're not doing a disservice to underserved communities. You know, and that's what the point I'm getting at. Now, this is outside of New Rochelle. It has to do with the zeitgeist. It has to do with a mentality where we don't open up and show our dirty laundry. We don't. We have to suppress it, like the murder North Avenue.
You know
in
what
New Rochelle
we suppress
4 years
it ago. Because we want to suppress it. I hate to tell you. You know, the police department in Yonkers, for example, there was an incident, a woman of Filipino extraction, older woman, I think she was 67 years old, lost her husband a year or two ago. Not very stable. She lives off of Riverdale Avenue, and she was fumbling for her keys, and she had a stroller as well. And there's a double door before you can enter the building. And she was able to open up the first door, but then somebody followed her and literally beat her senselessly before she was able to get into the second door. But literally there, and you know what? It was never reported. It happened on a Saturday. The Bianca Police Department did not report it until Monday. And you know what? They don't report a lot of things that happen that I do report about. That's why they're suing me for $17 million, but I'm going to win. Because I got documentation to prove it all. Where are the reporters in wherever the city or town or village is?
Well, one does what one can. When I have my outlet, and I was still on broadcast radio at the time, when the murder of the girl in the Dunkin' Donuts about 4 years ago now was when I began to realize, not that I'd been a dupe, that I should be scratching the surface a lot harder than I did at the time when it came to the way the school boards suppress information and spin.
Mm-hmm.
We had a situation, and it was such a an enigma in so many ways. A young girl who, you know, teenage nonsense. She may or may not have been involved. There were allegations of drug use and drug friends, but all that aside, mm-hmm. she got in an argument with some kids that she knew. Now, I'm only describing what went on. She was white. The kid that eventually stabbed her, tracked her down in two different eateries, stabbed her, and she died. Now, the girl's in prison, and justice was done. And not even, and, you know, New Rochelle, East Texas, of course, have some hard-bitten conservatives. And to their credit, they never once, this was among friends. It really wasn't a racial incident. This is my point. These girls did not stab her because she was white. She was one of them, but that was the coincidental issue. But it was so flagrant that she was hunted down and stabbed that it made news regionally, maybe even across the country. And fortunately, no one made it a racial incident. And I was grateful for that because it wasn't. So, but people were out.
So at least, it was lucid. It's just a case of murder.
No, right. Let me get to this. As we say in the trade, this is a reveal. And it was a huge reveal for me. So about 3 days later, there must have been 1,000 people, 800, maybe 1,000 people in this huge auditorium at the school to talk about it. Mm-hmm. And this was just in the beginning of the left really waving the flag. It was before George Floyd. And so I go to the auditorium with my mic to interview people, and people are arrayed up on the stage. And the first person to get up was a gentleman who represented an organization that went on for 20 minutes about how this issue was a racial issue, that blacks weren't treated fairly, that if you mention culture, if you mention crime, if you mention neighborhoods, if you mention anything of the sort regarding these kinds of things, you're a racist. And what would, you know, this is like somebody, we're talking airplanes, and he comes in and he talks about ships. And instead of being challenged, everybody bowed and scraped to what he had to say. Now, had he said this in a vacuum, and had he said this in an intellectual or philosophical discussion about things that are wrong with America, blah, 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 it would have been totally tolerable. We would have had a nice, people would have had a nice conversation. But what it did, it peeled away the facade of an honest conversation and introduced a narrative that totally poisoned the well of what happened. And yes, it was.
Yeah, but
it was,
don't you understand that this is what we've been doing for the last 10 years easily in America?
Yes. Yes,
so,
I do.
But
that
but
was
you,
my point.
You know,
I'm
make it
I'm
sound
sharing
like
with you.
The renegades don't run the show, except that the rest of us who may believe that this was, you know, somebody absconded with a story and with the concept of it and turned it into a racial issue is 100% correct. Is
no,
many
yes,
people
I
don't want to give expression to what they believe in, maybe out of fear or something else. So we don't know how to talk
yes.
to one another anymore.
You're,
and that's the problem.
Yes, and,
so I'm not
yes,
going to blame the guy
want,
that came up with his BS, but if I was there, I would stand up and say, sorry. Yeah, I understand and appreciate the ugliness of bigotry, whether it be on ethnic lines, religious lines, sexual lines, sexual preference, whatever you can imagine. There's always somebody that's got a story, but that doesn't mean that that's the only aspect of it all.
No, but
and you
the
know
point
what?
You're making is I got on the air, no, the point that you're making, which I responded to, which is I was disappointed. I shouldn't say surprised. Yeah, and somewhat surprised. That the powers that be from the council members, the mayor, all of these officials up on stage, they were rendered
mute
by an act.
Are you looking for votes? Are you looking for
No, I'm not.
I'm
no,
in
but
the news
all I'm
business.
Trying to do is put
I
a light
don't
on
give
it.
A
and you know what?
Right. You are
I'm
increasing
not there. The candle power. Thank you. You're increasing the candle power on the point that I'm trying to make. Which
okay,
is
so make the point.
That the truth the truth had no place in that room that day. It had no place. And as
but
I
as a reporter,
and as someone
as a radio you know radio announcer, you have the opportunity of giving expression to the concept that was expressed and at the same time having the capacity to validate maybe that there is another aspect of this conversation
and, you betcha,
and maybe a third
betcha.
And a fourth and a fifth.
Yeah, you betcha. You'd have been proud of me the next day. My monologue was called The Canary in the Cage. No, I know. But my monologue the next day was The Canary in the Cage because when it came to these kinds of issues, I skewed left in those days. Now, I don't skew right now. I just skew truth. And I was appalled. I was appalled, and I said it.
Well, what were you appalled
about?
What were you appalled about?
I was appalled that a person was allowed to go up and spew the antithesis of racial hatred in reverse.
Were you
first
okay,
of all?
The only thing is,
wasn't
I
an issue.
Have respect
it wasn't
for
an
you
issue.
Then or not, or maybe you just grew up. The bottom line is, did anybody in that whole room have anything else to say that was a different perspective, or did they just allow it? And if that's the case, then you've got nothing going on. Then you don't have conversation.
Right.
You don't even have a society.
Thank you.
You got nothing.
And they let it go. No, but they let it go because the same way we let Trump go for too long. The same way the Senate, he should have been impeached long. You know, he should have been removed from office. But we have in this country too much respect for things that can be labeled, as your previous guests talked about. If you can be labeled as something and that can be thrown at you, it is a weapon that we've grown all too timid about. And,
look, you know, I'm getting sick and tired of this adversarial perspective between the left and the right.
Yes, me too, because the truth is in the middle.
With Trump, as if there was everything that was right with Biden. I hate to tell you, but there were many things that were right with Trump. He had an attitude problem. He turned people off because of his attitude problem, and he would have done better if he was just a little bit of a nicer guy, so he would be more palatable.
True. But also, where does it say that we can't put a
problem? We don't have conversations.
Let me get to my point here.
There's nothing to talk about here.
Right, but there is
no
a conversation to be had. Let's take it to the next intellectual level. Why can't we, and I'm saying this as a general statement, why can't we criticize religion when it's appropriate? Why can't we put a president in jail?
What do you mean, why can't we? Maybe you don't, but I do. Who
does? Oh, no, I didn't say I
don't.
I'm not talking about
me. Don't you have an opinion? You have a right.
No, we're not, has he? We're not talking about me. I criticize religion every other day on the air and four times on Sundays. But as a general rule in society.
God will fight you for that.
Yeah, he's going to. You know, my favorite line used to be when someone says, "May God, like God, help the people in and God knows if there is one, he should in the Ukraine. But God's got busy things to do. Right now, he's giving a 3-year-old in Memphis a vicious form of cancer. Okay, she's much too busy. And my point being that
I don't know. I don't know if the good Lord. I don't know if the good Lord is doing that. It's probably us that's doing it. It's just we don't want to own up to the fact that
he's got
ways. Causing pain.
People need to understand the good use of humor to get at the truth. I'm not saying there is no God. That's a whole other conversation. But what I'm saying is, if you ascribe all of these motivations and purposes for God, you got to give him the whole game. Well, he cured my grandmother, but he killed my 2-year-old. Wow, justice! Please stop already. So these people,
it sounds to me like the argument that the guy made in that forum where nobody said anything back.
Yep, same thing. Anyway, my point, this was a point about spin. It wasn't to condemn New Rochelle. It's a point about spin because I love this city, but it needs to face its problems more head on. But as you would say, Hezzy, from the stuff, money rules the day. We have all this wonderful development where we wish to get upper middle class people renting all these apartments, and that's not a bad thing at all. And the city's got some wonderful development, but it needs to face the fact that we need to do more about school safety and stop being worried about being called a racist or a right-wing nut or whatever is the label that we apply.
And I don't think anybody's worried about being called that. It just falls off their back, and they couldn't care
less.
Well,
they were in that auditorium that day. They were in that auditorium.
Well, if they cowered under that sort of litany, then they did.
Yep.
Just like before, like the conduct of somebody who would urinate on somebody after beating them up is not an American way of conduct or response. You know, neither is the other stuff that happens where we permit people to go on and on and on spewing whatever horror they think is appropriate, because
this is where we are unkind.
It's up to him to change
to people
or her.
Yeah, we know we do, but this is where we're unkind to people on the right who have been trying to point some of these things out for years, but they get branded a racist and you can't talk about it anymore.
Who isn't being permitted to say anything?
They can say it, but then we lump them in just as your previous guest suggested.
No, we don't.
We lump
don't
them
you
in
dare,
with all right wing
nuts. Don't you
nuts.
Dare include everybody in this. No, there are
no,
people
what I'm
who
saying,
are
no,
like
no,
that.
My comments are made about the general zeitgeist at the time. When the people who would complain about those
only
kinds of
a minority, they're a minority, and if you don't like the minority, they're not the majority. Then it's time to pick up and go somewhere else. It just is. There's no other rationale.
Well, but we just can't keep labeling people for. I'm speaking to what your previous guest said. We can't keep labeling people when they have something constructive to say. And I realize I'm walking out
they
the same door I walked in.
They have to validate what they say. I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what anybody said that was valid or invalid.
Okay, here's what I'm talking about. If someone says that we need, and you can disagree with it, if someone says that we need a metal detector in the school, if someone says that we should have one or two armed guards in the school,
the bottom line is if they want a metal detector, what's the problem with it? Do you know?
Yeah, you're a racist.
What are we trying to protect by not having a metal detector? I'm not saying it's the right thing to do. I'm just simply asking if you know what
the
rationale is for not having one.
The image of our city is totally safe and enlightened.
Oh, yeah, but when people get stabbed and when people get shot and when people get beaten up going to whatever school you're talking about, that doesn't diminish the quality of life or the integrity of the cost of housing or buying a home or opportunity. None of that matters.
I love it when you take that thing to
get the kids in and out of school.
You're taking my position.
So.
Yes. No, you are. But except we're going about it in a different way. That is my point. That is precisely my
point. What
is
your
point?
What?
My point is that does as much harm to your city as not putting in that metal detector, if that's what is truly needed. But if we spin and we create a narrative.
Was it needed?
That may,
you know, you keep talking around in circles. Was it needed, Bob?
No, it was
Did they
needed.
Need a metal
it
detector in New Rochelle
yeah,
or wherever the city you're talking about?
Hezzy, rarely do I say this. You're missing the point here. The point is, it isn't about whether or not you need a metal detector. The point is that the spin that the city will place on it totally overrides whether you really need it or not.
But isn't that for the discussion of the parents and whoever was invited or was aware of that particular meeting?
Yes.
I thought there was discussion in America. I mean, if people are interested, they would show up.
They did.
Okay,
they did,
so if they did, then whoever was in the room, and did they ever come to a conclusion? Did they decide to go for it or against it? What was the rationale?
They decided in that specific case at that time not to. And that's a tree in the forest. Because they did not want to give the opinion that the schools were dangerous. And
okay,
it was
so
their right.
Because that's what they wanted people to glean about that particular school. They wanted to feel it was safe. Okay.
Yes.
And did the behavior that caused them to bring up this issue, did it ever come up again? Did it totally get obliterated by that particular decision and it never came up again as another issue? So maybe it was appropriate behavior.
No, it comes up again. It comes up again and again. But again, it's not about whether the thing is really needed so much as it is an attempt by the government, by the school system, and even by many parents.
I'm sorry, you go on for
too
long. What did the government do to cause this thing to not come about or to come about? What? I don't understand. Maybe I'm being obtuse today. I don't get it.
You have obtuse days, as the Aris.
No, I don't have obtuse days.
Yeah, well, you are today because you're missing the point that I'm trying to make. It's about the way narratives are controlled by government or can be controlled by government, their spokespeople, school boards, and they ignore the will of the people. Or even sometimes, and this happened in New Rochelle, the will of the left in that instance totally overrode the issue of school safety, in my opinion at the time. And I may even be wrong. But the point that I'm trying to make
you can't
to you,
be both ways,
and you spoke to her?
No, it can't be both ways. It can't be both ways. You're taking both sides of the issue because you want to equivocate. But the bottom line is, if there's no reason to revisit this issue, and if you keep
supposing
at every juncture,
we got a kid dead on the sidewalk.
Reason,
we got a kid, Hezzy, we got a kid dead on the sidewalk 3 weeks ago. Kid walked out of school at 3 o'clock and shot him.
He got kicked out of school? Why?
The kid walked out of school at 3 o'clock, both kids. One kid took his gun, which they believe that he had in school with him, and shot the other kid. The kid's dead.
What happened to the kid that shot the other kid?
He's in jail. And he'll likely be prosecuted as an adult. They're still deciding that. Look, my only point is, and I'll end on this note, that, and it's no surprise to you.
So do they need then a machine to find out if these people are, some people who are coming into school, whether adults or students, are carrying a gun or a knife?
I have one last
comment.
They need to have that conversation, okay? They really do. Let's hope
Why haven't they
because
had the conversation if it's
left,
so important?
Because the hard left in New Rochelle has become so powerful, or in Westchester, that they may get shouted down before they even have a conversation.
Well, that's their problem. Then they should rot in hell because they're not stupid people. They should be able to come up with a lucid conversation and lucid valuation of why yes or why no. I'm sorry. These people are not impotent fools.
I know.
They're just not. Well,
I know.
Then let them get
I
it
understand.
Together. Hey, where's the mayor? Doesn't he have an opinion? Oh, or maybe he's hiding out. You know, but then it wouldn't be the first time he's been hiding out.
Sometimes
you know, these things are concocted because we permit people to do what they do, and there is no response. So that means you can't just show up at a meeting and think that you're going to be able to get cajoled into a discussion when there is no concept that you're bringing to the equation. Don't you know why you're coming to a meeting like this? You'd have to know. Otherwise, why are you coming?
Mm-hmm.
You know, not to pick up a girl. Well, maybe that is one of the reasons, but the point is that you know, whatever. You know? So for me, it's already, those days are over. You know, at my age, forget about it. But, you know,
I take back my obtuse comments. Oh, God, I love you.
Yeah, but, you know,
oh,
I just wonder how it's all going to turn out. If this is the dynamic that's happening in any community anywhere in the country, it's frightening. Because I can't imagine.
When's the last time you could have a really truly honest conversation about race? When we desperately need it without people pointing fingers. And that's why
it sounded like I
was equivocating.
I grew up in a time when, guess what, we used to have debating teams. You'd have Yale on one side, Harvard on the other, Stanford somewhere else, and they would each take a position that was given to them in the first half hour or 45 minutes. And then 45 minutes later, you switch sides. And whatever you argued before, now you had to argue the other side. And that's the way it was. And we learned a great deal from that because we learned that there was a perspective that could be abided by on one side and one on the other side. And that the same people who could come up with concepts that are valid from one side could also come up with valid points for the other side. We don't do that anymore because we don't have people who have a backbone, or maybe we need some mediator and say, okay, Bob, you're on one side now. Hezzy, you'll be on the other side now. And then we'll switch sides 45 minutes later. The best individual will win, which will probably be Bob Moreau. So that's the way it goes.
I might be Hezzy. I might let you win. I might let you. But you see, folks,
every now and then, every blue moon.
You watched Hezzy. You've listened to Hezzy skillfully rope me into an hour on the air instead of my allotted 30 minutes. But this is what
we need more.
Well, you
know, I don't know how you do
more.
That, Bob.
I didn't do that. Well, see? Oh, no, how'd you do that, Bob?
Well, that's not your fault. That was my fault because I gave, we had Brendan and I'm losing my mind, Brendan and Jeff.
His partner.
They went over time with you. That was your time. And then you went over time with me. And so I'm not going to be able to talk about Ukraine at all, which is okay, because it'll be there tomorrow. But not to worry.
It certainly will be. It certainly will, you know.
Unfortunately.
Unfortunately, though, I mean, the theme both from those guys are wonderful, and the discussion that we've had is we've got to be able to talk. And I just don't know. I just don't know where we're headed. But hey, speaking of Ukraine, I would like to just say one thing. The courage and the reaction of the Ukrainians to this has been one of the more genuine things. When I say genuine, it doesn't mean good or bad or indifferent, but genuine, well, at least for me, it was positive, true things in this world of misinformation that I've come upon and heard about and had to talk about in a very, very long time. You know, there's so little genuineness in the world. Everything is a game, but what's going on with them is not. And that people can truly believe in something and willing to live risk their lives for it is a beautiful thing. I guess I'll end on that note.
Who knows where it's going to end? I think, unfortunately, Putin has really lost it. He's just a bad character, and he's offended that how many weeks has it been since this thing got started? Over 4 weeks now?
Yeah,
and he's been kept
weeks,
at bay. Unbelievable. Talk about, wanting freedom to such an extent. People are putting their life on the line, being bombed from here to Kingdom Come. Literally, I don't know where Kingdom Come is. They're dead. It's unbelievable.
Well, listen, thank you so much, my friend. I need to move along now that I'm a half hour off my own schedule. But it is always a pleasure. Thank you so very much for the time. And you be well.
Well, next week we'll have to make sure to keep it exactly on time. I'll have to talk to the guy.
That I will.
Okay.
No, it's quite okay. In fact, one of these days I'd love to get to participate with those guys. They're wonderful, even on the time you give me. They're wonderful. As are you sometimes.
They really are. Well, rarely, I'm not consistent. You see, they are. So that's the difference.
You're mercurial.
Well, listen, Bob, all the best to you. You enjoy the week.
Thank you, my friend.
Take care of yourself, and then we'll speak next week as well. Always a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. Pleasure's mine.
Be well. Bye. Well, there we are, folks. Tomorrow is going to be another day. We're going to be speaking to none other than socioeconomic research scholar Orrin M. Levin-Waldman. And he's written something which is entitled, "The Elites Couldn't Care Less About Inflation." So we're going to hear about his perspective tomorrow at 10 o'clock. He'll be on from 10 to 11. Just a brilliant, brilliant guy. And he's on with us every second week. It's always something to learn. And it starts off with, the nation is now plagued by inflation. And that's the question. And then the next sentence is, which is really mind-blowing, is, the president, however, has placed the blame for inflation on Putin. And so you'll have to read the, you could read the article in anticipation of Wednesday's broadcast tomorrow at 10, and you get a concept of what Professor Levin-Waldman is talking about, and I think you'll find it very, very interesting. And somebody else, which is very interesting as well, Bill Knuckle, who ran for mayor of Yonkers many, many years ago. At one time he was a Republican, and then he was a Democrat, and I'm not sure exactly where he is right now. A little bit of this and a little bit of that. That's what they say Yonkers is, a little bit of country and a little bit of rock and roll. And so he's now saying, can we really blame President Biden? And this one is an op-ed piece written by Bill Knuckle. And I think you'll find that interesting as well. And it just goes on and on. We cover like everything under the sun, everything under the sun. And so there's a lot to know about. And I don't know. Well, we are down to our 90-second time frame. So I want to thank everybody for being with us today. Always a pleasure, to say the least. And then there was Josh and John today. Always a pleasure, their input to the broadcast. Hopefully you'll join us tomorrow. Just remember that if you call in, the call-in number is the same. However, the broadcasts are defined through where you could listen in just simply by listening live or online. So you could just simply go to Yonkers Tribune and look up Westchester on the Level, and you'll find all the shows there. Anyway, thanks again. Be well. Take care of yourselves and be kind to one another. That's always the best thing. Goodbye.